Welcome to Journal Club for October 18th, 2024. I'm Malcolm Diggs. In the 2017 mayoral race in Jackson, Mississippi, an unusual thing happened. The Democratic incumbent, Mayor Tony Yarber, was challenged by members of his own party. Eight of them. They attacked him on his record, on his policies, and on his plans. But most of all, they attacked him on potholes. You see, potholes are endemic in Jackson. About 200 miles north of New Orleans, Jackson is often hot and humid. The moisture penetrates the road surface, seeping into small cracks and weakening the foundation. Over time, the soil is less able to support the road surface, and as the traffic passes over it, deformities begin to form. First, rutting, then larger dips and cracks. Meanwhile, scorching midday temperatures soften the road, then colder nights cause it to contract again, and the cracks and the dips get worse. Water fills the deformities, and the vicious cycle continues. In Jackson, that meant pothole after pothole after pothole. The residents had seen enough and were ready for someone to step in and fix the problem. In 2015, sensing the growing frustration among the residents, the incumbent mayor had taken to Twitter. Quote, "Yes, I believe we can pray potholes away. Moses prayed and a sea opened up. Hashtag, I see ya. Hashtag, I trust him. Hashtag, prayer works." Unquote. 2 years later, he was voted out of office. This mayor, who had won the previous election with a 7-point margin, now attracted a total of less than 6% of the vote. The successful Democratic challenger, Chokwe Antar Lumumba, had focused his campaign on infrastructure, largely on potholes. It worked. What's the point of me telling you all this? It's simply to stress the case that potholes are important. They're important to local communities, and they're important to local elections. But the reason they're important is subtle. It's not necessarily about the damage that potholes do to vehicles, although that can be quite significant. It's not necessarily about how uncomfortable it is to drive or ride over a pothole-laden street. No. Potholes are such a hot-button issue during elections because they're often viewed as a physical manifestation of the local government's responsiveness, or lack thereof. A government that spots and fixes the potholes on your street is a government that cares about you and your neighbors. A pothole that sits and gets bigger and more dangerous is not just an eyesore, it's a daily reminder that your local officials do not care about you. But this is nothing new. Governments of all sizes have understood this dynamic for a long time, and they've called in a lot of help. Help from service providers, help from the tech sector, help from other government agencies, and help from researchers. As a result, potholes, believe it or not, are an immensely popular area for research. It's a perennial problem that people are willing to throw money at. It's such a popular topic for computer vision, in fact, that there are already multiple publicly available road damage datasets with many thousands of images each. It is with all of that in mind that we turn to today's research. It presents a convolutional neural net for potholes. Hardly a groundbreaking work, I'll admit. But I'm including it in Journal Club for a few reasons. One, as this is such an active area of research, it behooves us to, once in a while, check in with the latest accomplishments in this area. Two, this research actually focuses on the processing of video, not still images, which is a more interesting problem. It's valuable for all of us to see how they tackled video ingestion and processing, etc. Three, this research prioritizes real-time, ultra-low-latency processing. But at the same time, they're using a convolutional neural network. Those things are not normally ideas that play well together. I think it's useful for us to see how they reconcile those two constraints. So let's get into it. I mentioned that there are big public datasets full of pothole images. Interestingly enough, they decided not to start with those. Instead, the authors created their own dataset of over 5,000 images of pavement defects captured from more than 2,000 locations. Each image was manually reviewed and annotated, and the dataset was split into 70% for training, 20% for validation, and 10% for testing. Next, they needed to choose a model. They reviewed four categories of options: VGG16, ResNet, Inception, and then various versions of YOLO. The authors ended up choosing YOLO V4 Tiny because it's efficient, fast, and requires fewer computational resources. They also optimized it by adding a pre-processing stage and modifying the loss function. I think it's worth diving into their pre-processing stage a bit before we move on. They built a pipeline that could take road surface videos through these phases prior to them being fed into the model for training. Slice the video into individual frames, images. Converted color images to grayscale to reduce data complexity. Applied a median filter for noise reduction. Performed image augmentation, including random rotation, scaling, and brightness adjustments. Optimized image contrast and brightness using dynamic correction based on video lighting conditions. And prepared the dataset for model input by adjusting image sizes to 416 by 416 pixels. Now it was time to train. They used PyTorch with OpenCV, NumPy, Matplotlib, and Pillow for data handling and visualization. They trained the YOLO V4 Tiny model with a batch size of 64, input image size of 416 by 416 pixels, and a learning rate of 0.00261. The hardware was an NVIDIA Titan X Pascal GPU. During training, they iteratively adjusted the hyperparameters and employed both forward and backward training methods. Forward and backward training are different in respect to the direction of information flow during the model training process. In forward training, the model processes input data through the network layers to make predictions. In backward training, the model adjusts weights based on the error or loss by propagating gradients back through the layers. In this study, the authors did both. They also used a series of data augmentation techniques during training, such as random rotations, scaling, and brightness adjustments. They monitored progress using metrics like loss values and mean average precision. In addition to needing to run normal inference, the authors had a specific goal of processing video in real time. The issue is, there's no agreed-upon definition for what real time is. So absent a definition, let's create one. I personally think it'd be fair, in this case, to define real-time processing as the ability to process and return the result for one input frame prior to the next one being received. Just to cover our bases for those who are not familiar with how video works, think of it as just a set of individual frames with an audio track attached to the whole thing. A video player plays a video by just cycling through the individual frames at the specified frame rate and delivering the audio in parallel. There are 1,000 milliseconds in a second, of course, and most streaming video is either 24 or 30 frames per second, with high-end gaming and HD sports sometimes being streamed as high as 60 frames per second. There are higher frame rates than that, but they're atypical. If we use 60 frames per second as the highest reasonable frame rate to expect, probably much lower, but that's the highest, then the model would need to be able to perform inference 60 times per second in order to be considered real time, according to our definition. This means the model would have roughly 16.67 milliseconds to process each frame. So that's the standard. If the authors achieved a frame processing speed of faster than 16.67 milliseconds, then I believe they successfully built a real-time system. So did they? Well, after training, tuning, validation, and reworking the model several times, they ended with a benchmark test. The model was able to run inference in, drumroll please, 5.6 milliseconds, corresponding to a maximum real-time frame rate of 178 frames per second, well exceeding our standard. The model was blazingly fast, and for its size and speed, it was fairly accurate as well. It was able to achieve an overall accuracy of 93.75% MAP at speed. So what can we take away from this paper? Narrowly, if you're willing to sacrifice a bit of accuracy, then real-time model inference on a CNN is not only possible, but fairly straightforward. By choosing a tiny model and painstakingly pre-processing their data, they were able to build something that is truly blazingly fast. Broadly, it's too late for Mayor Yarber, but not for other local officials and governments. It's never been easier or cheaper to develop and deploy systems that keep track of road conditions. Don't let the tech be the thing that stops you, because it's very doable. If you'd like to see some photos from their training set or review the methodologies or tools in more detail, I'd encourage you to download the paper. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. I hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.